He does get it to Reggie, who squares.
Boom, baby!
Pacers still need some help. Oh, he threw it away. Reggie for three.
Boom, baby! It's a tie ball game.
Unbelievable! Yeah, across the timeline with four. Down the right side, and he fell down. No whistle, and that's it!
Hey, wait, can you believe it?
They have stolen game one.
This is unbelievable.
Well, I remember that game being, I was so upset, first of all, that we were down. I felt we were a much better team than the Knicks at that particular time. But that game, we didn't just show up. And I remember coming out of the timeout, I said, okay, if we get a quick three and cut the deficit down, anything is possible. I knew they didn't have any timeouts. So that kind of worked in our favor, but I don't think they knew they didn't have any timeouts left. So when I made the quick three, it was going to be a scramble situation. I saw Anthony Mason kind of leaning and tipping over the line, and he threw the best chest pass I've ever seen in my life right to me. And I knew immediately, I easily could have gone in for the lay-in, but I said, let me get back to the three and tie her up, and that's what happened. But what's funny is people don't understand that tied the game up. Sam Mitchell did not know that. But in hindsight, it turned out because he fouled John Starks. John Starks misses the two free throws. I get the rebound, get fouled, and that's where the last 2 points come for the 8 points in 9 seconds.
Well, I didn't think we played well. And so when we were down toward the end of the game, I walked out it was in the last minute, so I just felt like we're going to lose. I walked out, and I was kind of upset because I thought we'd perform better. So I get in the locker room, and I'm in the locker room, and I'm walking around in circles, and I hear a knock on the door, and it's Mel Daniels, who's my buddy and, you know, one of my favorite people. But I'm not in the mood to talk to him because he's always nudging me. So I hear him say, Donnie, and I went to the door. I said, Mel, I'm not in the mood for this today. Don't do it again. He kept knocking on the door. So finally I opened it up. I said, what do you want? And he said, Reggie just tied the game. I looked at him and I said, what are you talking about? And then he said, well, come here. And he walks me about 20 feet, and there's a television set with some guys looking at it. And Reggie's going to the foul line by this time. And so I say to Mel, when I kind of adjust my brain, I say, are you telling me that if Reggie makes these free throws, we're ahead in this game? And he said, yeah. Well, he made both free throws, and we had to put in the game. I almost fell over. I mean, that's how improbable it was. And it's probably one of the greatest finishes that our team's ever been involved in. I was going to say I was involved in, but I wasn't involved.
when you got a chance to go back and actually see what happened, what were your thoughts?
Well, I had a couple of thoughts. You know, the first shot that Reggie made, that's what Reggie did. And he always did it in the last 5 seconds and that kind of thing. So I was, you know, that didn't shock me. But when the next play was when he was kind of guarding Anthony, who was coming to get the ball, and Mason was taking it out. I saw Mason kind of, you know, he was starting to tip over the line. And so I knew he's going to have to shoot, he's going to pass that ball now. And he thought that way too. I could see it in his face. Well, at that point, Reggie was way behind. He was sort of behind. He wasn't really that far, but this time he was behind Anthony. And so I thought, well, Anthony's going to get the ball. He's going to have to foul him. Well, Anthony ran and then stopped. And when he stopped, Reggie kind of bumped into him. And then he fell down. I think he was trying to get a foul, or he just lost his footing. And Anthony had already passed the ball when he went down on the floor, so it went right to Reggie. So that the first thing was getting the ball that was remarkable at that point. The second thing was that when Reggie got the ball, he could have just driven in and laid the ball in the basket, and we would have been down by one. But he didn't. He turned around and dribbled all the way out to the three-point line, and it was in the point of the court where it's the longest shot you can take. You could tell, didn't even think about it, just turned around and shot it, and it went in. And I said, oh, my goodness. Then Sam Mitchell committed a dumb foul. He thought that we were still down, so he fouled them on purpose, and he fouled John Starks. Well, John goes to the foul line. You can tell looking at John's face. He's so flustered by what Reggie's just done. And Reggie, of course, is letting him know that he's flustered. You know, he's flustered. And so he missed the first free throw, missed the second free throw. Reggie gets the rebound. He gets fouled, and that was led to the two shots that he made, which, you know, basically put us ahead by two.
Again, looking at this in hindsight, and everything that you've seen over your career, is that something that, I mean, you never say never, but we may never ever see something like that again.
I think you'll see last shots that are amazing. But the sequence of events there where you're down that amount of points with such little time, I mean, the things have to fall together in your favor, you know, and the odds of it happening, you know, I read the papers, it's kind of ridiculous. So you may not see it, you know. I'm not going to say with what I see in the NBA today and the kind of athletes they have, somebody's going to be capable of doing something like that, but I don't know. It won't surpass what he did. That's for sure.
Suffice to say that you've never seen anything like that.
Oh, I've never seen anything like that. That's what made it so improbable to me was I thought the game was over when I walked into the locker room. You know, I just got tired of sitting there where the Knicks were beating us and I thought we were better than them. So I went into the locker room and that's, you know, but I found then that's when all that happened.
In talking to Larry and Sam Mitchell, they both said the same thing. Larry always coached under the pretense that, you know, it's cliche, it's never over till it's over. But Larry always coached that you played to the final horn.
And he was like that.
Yeah, I mean, and your thoughts on Larry's mentality, especially in that part of the game where there's a timeout with 16 seconds to go and, heck, you're down 6 points.
When you're coaching, you're not observing the game. You're in the game. And Larry's in the game. So, you know, 1 second can seem like, you know, people say a lifetime. It's not quite a lifetime, but it's a lot of time. And you can win a game in 1 second. So that's the mentality Larry's going to have at that point. So I get why Larry thinks the way he does, because I thought that way when I was a coach. But it works too. Having that mentality works, and always being that way works as well. And Larry was always that way. You know, he always felt like he could win the game when you probably couldn't. In that game, I'm sure he felt he could win the game. And he did. You know, the game, you know, Reggie pulled it off. It was incredible what he did.
Well, I mean, Sam pointed out that when he committed the foul, you know, Reggie came out and put his arm around him and then proceeded to go trash talk to Starks. And Sam said he looked at the bench and, you know, he expected Larry to have, like, his head in his hands. But Larry was, you know, clapping and saying, hey, hang in there. We're okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's what you should do in that situation. I mean, he did it. So, you know, you try to turn it around and make it something good and keep the enthusiasm that you can win the game. And so that doesn't surprise me. I didn't see Larry do that, but I'm not surprised he did. I thought Larry was a terrific coach, particularly for the type of team that we had at that point. You know, they were all veterans. The way he dealt with them the whole year was the best I've ever seen. You know, and he worked them hard. I'm not acting like he was easy on them. He was not easy on them. But he just had a feel for all the important things that occurred during the season. And that's why we ended up having a team like we had. Plus, you know, he stood as an example to the players because they had played against Larry, every one of those guys. So, you know, they knew that he knew. And it was a good combination for the 3 years that he coached.
So let's talk about Reggie for a moment and the sequence that, you know, again, you never say never, but considering the magnitude, it was the Eastern Conference Finals. It was Madison Square Garden. You're a New York guy. You know what it's like there.
I do.
But Reggie seizing that moment in that place on that stage.
Well, Reggie had seized it long before that. I mean, Reggie, the minute we came into the Garden, you know, he wasn't like that on the plane up there and all that. Although he was always quiet, Reggie. I mean, people really have a misconception of Reggie Miller. You know, I would say this. He was one of the nicest guys you could ever want to be around. But not when you were playing in the court against him. The minute he went on the court, he became a different animal. So he wanted to go up to New York, and because up to that point, they had a very good team back then. They had beat us, and it was always close, but we always lost. So he was intent on winning the series, even in the first one, which we lost in 7 games. But every time we went up there, he was intent on winning that game or that series. That was just his attitude. He got very, very serious. But the truth was, he was kind of like that in a lot of games.
So you can admit this now. When you drafted him, you knew he could do that, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. I knew that. You know, I had some kind of I went through a wormhole and saw him do it. And then came back and said, well, he'll do this. No, I don't think you ever know. In fact, I get asked a lot about Reggie in the context of all the great players of all time. And, you know, like Michael Jordan, if you're good at Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. And I tell people, if you ask me that question, first of all, I don't think you can compare generations to generation. However, in that case, he played against all those guys. And I said, I don't know that I could say that Reggie was a better basketball player than Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, or Michael Jordan, for sure. But I can tell you this, that in the game that they played against him, he was what I would call an impact player, which is what they were, too. They had more skill, ability, athletic ability, whatever you want to say. But the fact was, when the game was on the line, he could make the shots that won the game. And that's what their advantage was on the rest of the league. And he did it against them, you know, during regular season and the playoffs. And so they knew it too. So they treated Reggie like he was an impact player. And that's what I would call him. He had the same kind of impact some of the great players of the day had. Now, when you sit back 5 years later and say, well, who's better than who, you know, then he's going to suffer in that comparison. But as far as, like, in the games that he played, he was a threat to win the game. Like that game he just went over. I mean, he won the game in, like, scoring 8 points in 8 seconds. Not many people do that. There are moments like that in sports that you will remember 25 years later. And it was that remarkable that would be one you'd pick out. You know, I'm sure there are others that people think about other players in the league, but that one with Reggie would stand up there with anybody else. And it was a great moment. And it ended up being a great moment for us. So, you know, it was a big thing for us at the time. And he was part of a lot of those. We went to Eastern Conference Finals, I think, 6 times during that period, and went to the finals once. And Reggie was part of all of that, I believe.
Leading up to the last 8 points and 8.9 seconds sequence, what do you remember about that game with the Knicks?
I just remember, it being a tough, hard-fought game. I can remember, back and forth, the trash talking, the bad blood, the energy in the building, the disappointment, when it seemed like it was going to go the other way. I can see, everybody else jumping up and down and the intensity in the Garden, thinking that the victory was sealed and they were going to be propelled to move on. So I just remember the environment overall being electric.
All right. So take us through your perspective on the last sequence.
I can just remember being in a timeout and it being, silence and, basically the message being that it's far from over, but not for 1 second anybody buying into it's far from over. It seemed like it was over, but that little glimmer of hope, we left the huddle like we had so many other times, thinking it could happen. We don't know how, but it could happen. And all of a sudden, our best player, the Hall of Famer, the superstar Reggie Miller, did something that was absolutely historic.
And what was it like from your view?
I would have paid for it, to have a front row seat to witness something that all these years later we're still talking about and still can't believe that it took place. It was special, and nobody deserved that moment more than Reg. All that he had put into a Pacer uniform, all that he had put into practicing, preparing, and not being afraid of the bright lights. And that was certainly the brightest lights that we would find in enemy territory. And he wore it well. And it was incredible for me to have a front row seat to witness greatness firsthand.
We talked to Sam Mitchell earlier about his foul on Starks.
Yes.
And he made the remark that one of the great things about that team was, he said, I thought we were down one. He said, but I committed the foul. And, Reggie came up, put his arm around me, and he looked over at Larry, and Larry was clapping his hands saying, it's okay, it's okay. And he just remarked about how that team stayed together even in the direst of circumstances.
Well, you think about it. If that same play is made by a Nick in the same situation, let's say John Starks makes that play. Now, that was an outstanding team. But if John Starks makes that same play that Sam Mitchell made, Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, and the rest of the team, they're going to be pushing him, shoving him, yelling at him, and demanding an explanation of what was on his mind. In our situation, it was like, okay, you made a mistake. And like a baseball team, we're going to cover it. We'll pick you up. And that was the mindset. Mistake was made. Sam owned the mistake. Honest mistake. It wasn't the first mistake made in that game or that season. So we did what we've become accustomed to doing, picking each other up. And that's exactly what the mindset was. And the results followed.
Do you remember Reggie trash talking John going to the free throw line?
I do remember him trash talking him, pretty much the whole game, the whole series, every time we faced him. But in particular, when John went to the free throw line, and they covered it so well in the 30 for 30 on ESPN, where you can look in John's eyes and just he wasn't as comfortable as, he normally would be. There were different free throws he was about to attempt, and Reggie, being Reggie, got under his skin. And I don't know if it played a factor, but I know it made for good TV and it resulted in John missing. And you can see right after that, Reggie gets fouled and you look in his eyes, and it didn't matter who was talking to him or who tried to trash talk him, he embraced those free throws.
So in the years that have passed, when you've been able to watch this sequence on film, what are your impressions when you actually watch it? Is it still as incredible and as amazing as it was when it happened?
You look at the game and then you see when it gets to that point, and then you're sitting there going, okay, I know that we won the game, but I still cannot figure out how it happened. So you find yourself glued to the TV, still looking at each sequence, each play as they happen and transpire. And it's fascinating TV, but more importantly, all these years later, it's like you're watching it for the first time. And it really is a historic sequence, and it couldn't have happened at a better location than Madison Square Garden.
So a follow-up on that, you are a New York guy, and their passion for basketball in New York, which Donnie talked about earlier, the Garden, the Eastern Conference Finals, the stage that you guys were on, Reggie in particular, does that make it even more incredible because of, again, the circumstances, the stage, the whole thing?
It does. And, we loved our home court. But if you asked us where could we win the game, would we prefer that team in particular? Would we prefer to do it in Indiana or in Madison Square Garden? We would have said Madison Square Garden because we had a bunch of players that the DNA was made up of wanting to do it in enemy territory, wanted to see the disappointing frowns and facial expressions of the Spike Lees and everybody else in that arena. They had, beaten and been a bully to, Indiana for so many years. And they signified, the big stage and the bright lights. And we wanted to send a message of just who we represented. And it was Indiana basketball. And we can hear the people in the streets of Indiana, whether it be in the driveway, the parks, or the gyms, celebrating and acknowledging how we took down the bully.
You've played, you've coached, and now you obviously do many games on television and see many plays, many players. Is this something that, would it be safe to say, that will never be duplicated?
I can't say it never will be, but I can't see how it will be, because I would have said it never would take place, and it did. It took a special group of players that believed, a special, coach that believed in us, a special all-time great talent in Reggie Miller that was willing to take and make big shots. And so I would never say that it can't be duplicated, but I would say it was absolutely remarkable. It happens once in a lifetime.
The last thing for me, can you just speak a little bit, about Reggie's competitiveness and his willingness and want to seize the moment?
Well, he's an all-time great competitor. He's an all-time great worker. He's an all-time great pacer. His drive, his commitment, his ability to embrace the bright lights, the biggest moments, and true adversity is unmatched. He wanted to face, Michael Jordan. He wanted to face Kobe Bryant. He wanted to face the greats, and he wanted to do it in one jersey, and that was Indiana Pacers jersey. It really is remarkable when you think about the guy had an opportunity, I don't know if people know or not, but an opportunity, a couple of years after retiring, to put on a jersey and have a chance to win a championship, and refused to because he wanted to go out wearing a Pacer jersey. He is the absolute greatest player to ever wear that jersey, and that's with all due respect to the greats that have worn it. What it says is how special of a moment it was, because we've seen things take place and then, you know, you throw it out the window and you say, man, is that happened? Yeah, it happened. But people are still talking about it 25 years later because it was historic, because the odds were stacked against accomplishing what took place. And for that group of, you know, somewhat misfits and a superstar, to have a place still talking about it all these years later and celebrating it, just really is an example of how special the moment was. And we got a lot to be proud of.
Sam, to the best of your recollection, and you have a pretty sharp memory, can you just talk about the last 16 seconds or so and your role in it?
Well, David, the biggest thing, I knew I lost track of the score because, you know, when you're in a situation like that, you don't really expect to come back and win the game. You know, you hoping and you play to the final buzzer, but you don't think you're going to win the game. And what Larry told us was if we score and get a steal, try to get a quick basket, he didn't say for Reggie or whoever to dribble out to the three and take a shot. He just said try to get a quick basket and get back into the press and trap and try to force another turnover. So that was the thought process. And when we came out of that huddle, when we started all that, that was our thought process. And then all of a sudden, one thing led to another. And all of a sudden, I remember distinctly when Anthony Mason was taking the ball out, he stumbled and he started leaning in and he was about to step over and get a violation. And he just kind of flipped it out there. And Reggie came from nowhere, tipped the dribble back and scored. And then Anthony Mason, again, and I have a pet peeve about this. I always tell kids that I coach, clear the basket after a made field goal. You can clear the basket and run the baseline. But again, Anthony Mason, and this is the thing that I was thinking about this last night, David, when you called me and asked me about this. This team had Pat Riley as the head coach and Jeff Van Gundy as an assistant. And I think was Stan an assistant also, I'm not sure. But anyway, you had three. Pat Riley's an all-time great Hall of Fame coach. And then you got Jeff and Stan, who are two prominent NBA coaches. And they had a guy on their team in that situation taking the ball out that didn't understand that he could run the baseline or that he needed to clear the basket in order to inbound the pass. So all of that happening. And the biggest thing I remember, Dave, is when we got that second steal and Reggie scored in that third. And all of a sudden, they finally got the ball in, and I reached out and I grabbed John Starks because I thought we were still down by one because everything happened so fast, I lost track of the score. And as soon as I fouled, I looked up and saw the score was tied. And, man, I could have just shot myself right there because I just felt like I had blown a game in the playoffs on the road in New York. And I remember this. The first thing my eyes did, I looked over at the bench at Larry Brown. And this is why I love LB to this day. He didn't have his head down. He wasn't yelling and screaming and cursing, Sam, what you do? He was just clapping and saying, Mitch, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're in the game. We got a chance to win. Don't worry about it. And then the next thing I remember was Reggie Miller coming up to me, putting his arms around me. And I was trying to explain to him what happened and how sorry I was. And all he said to me, man, don't worry about it. And David, you had been around us, that team. We were special not because of the talent. And we were a talented team. We were special because we were a team. And we were close. And, you know, we used to argue with each other about guys being in the lineup. I mean, we didn't care who got the glory as long as we won the game. And I remember Reggie saying that. And then I remember John Starks walking in front. And I don't know if I could use this language on this interview, but Reggie Miller said basically, Mitch, don't worry about it. That you know what is going to choke. And as soon as he said that, and he said it loud so John Starks could hear, and as soon as he said it, John Starks turned around and started yelling at Reggie and gave him two good words to start with an F and then you know what, the other one. And we're on the free throw line and Reggie's still talking trash to John. And when John Starks took that first free throw and it was short, Reggie said, hey, Mitch, I told you that you know what was going to choke. And you know, if the first one's short, the second one's going to be long. And sure enough, John Starks dribbled, got into his rhythm. And when he let that ball go, you could tell it was going to hit the back of the rim. And when it came off, Dale Davis tipped it and Reggie grabbed it. And John Starks was so irate. He just grabbed Reggie and fouled him. And the thing that I think about today is, I was telling my wife this last night when I was telling her about the interview and telling her what happened. The thing that's amazing to me is they turned around and did the same thing I had did a minute earlier. Fouled a guy in a tie score when you're in the, when the other team was in the bonus. In an intentional foul. Not a loose ball foul, not going for a rebound, not trying to guard a guy. An intentional foul. And I remember looking over at the Knicks bench, and Pat Riley could have turned every color in the rainbow. He just couldn't believe it. And we knew at that point the game was over because we knew, unlike John Starks, Reggie Miller was not going to miss two free throws. It just wasn't going to happen. And he made them both. But the thing that I remember most is that, and I thought about this a lot, my relationship with that team or the players or the coaches would not have changed or altered one bit if we would have lost that game. We were that close. And Larry never, ever, and after the game, I tried to apologize to him after the game. He was like, Mitch, what are you apologizing for? Well, Coach, I made a mental mistake. He was like, look, we weren't supposed to win that game. You guys on the floor gave us a chance to win it. That game, that happened so quick. We all lost track of the score. He said, but, you know, I wouldn't have blamed you if we would have lost the game because I didn't think we could win it at that point. Yeah, you play to the final buzzer. You play the game all the way through, and you give yourself every opportunity. But, you know, David, you see a win like that once every 10 years. So it was something that I learned a lot from. But the most important thing I learned was that not just about focus and understanding the time and score and situation and all that stuff, but what I learned about, if you are surrounded by a group of people that love you and care about you and you are truly a team, then you can overcome anything. And that's what I thought. When I think about that Pacer team that I played on those 2 years with Lab Brown, we lost 2 game 7s in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think about how close we were. And to this day, I'm close with everybody that was on that basketball team still.
In that particular game, you obviously had a good game. What was your recollections of your own performance in that game?
Really don't remember much. You know, obviously, Reggie's the one that, you know, took over there, and that's really all that stood out. You know, that's what was most memorable. I finally found out, you know, like I did so many of those games. But, yeah, you know, Reggie's finished there and was saved the day, you know, and, man, what a feeling that was to shut Madison Square Garden, you know, to shut everybody up, you know, to quiet them down. And even, you know, after the game, New York City seemed like they were in shock. You know, they had that thing won. They thought they did. You know, to come out there after the game and everything was so quiet. It was a pretty good feeling. You know, it was fun to be a part of.
So yes, you did foul out, but
no surprise.
Well, because Larry Brown, we talked to him, and he goes, because I mentioned that, you know, Rick had a really good game that game. He goes, yeah, he fouled out, but he fouled out in a lot of them.
Yeah, I was good at that.
So from the best of your recollection, you've obviously watched the sequence many times. What was it like from your view on the bench?
You know, it happened so fast. Everything just happened so fast. You know, we were almost in shock. You know, not that we didn't think or know that Reggie was capable of something like that. You know, it definitely was. But still, to see it happen, you know, I probably was just as much shocked as the rest of Madison Square Garden. You know, and I'm just happy we were, you know, he was on our side that day.
In talking to Larry, you know, Larry said that the one thing that he always emphasized as a coach and with that team or any team that he coached, that you always played to the end, no matter what the score was.
Yeah.
And, I mean, do you recall him being that way?
Yeah, I do remember that mindset. You know, like I said earlier, it's not over till it's, you know, till we gotta go off the court, you know. And that was probably something he preached, but hey, that's just common sense, you know. We've seen plenty of last second shots, you know. As I said earlier, not maybe that drastic a difference, you know, with that little time to go, but you know, it can happen.